Broadcasting from our studios in Commerce, Texas, this is Notably Texan on 88.9 KETR and KETR.org. I'm host Matt Minky. On today's show, we are lucky enough to catch up with a man who is rarely slowed down long enough to provide interviews due to his rigorous tour schedule, sometimes performing up to 300 dates a year. He just put out his 18th studio release, which is titled Gems and Jams, and it has received praise from Americana Highways and American Songwriter Magazine, among others. He got to Texas as quick as he could, and I'll be interested to hear about his migration to San Antonio during my chat today with singer and songwriter Dallas Moore. Dallas, welcome to Notably Texan. It is great to speak with you today.
How you doing, Matt?
I'm fantastic. I'm always better when I'm talking to the people behind the music like we're doing with you today. And I know that you are constantly kind of traveling for gigs around the nation. So where are we checking in with you today?
Well, I'm calling in on a rare day off.
Okay.
I'm calling in from my honky-tonk hacienda in San Antonio, Texas. I'm getting ready to leave on my Dallas Moore 2024 Wild West tour. We've got a week of shows in Arizona coming up, and then a week of shows in California, and then we get back here home to Texas just in time for Honky Tonk Halloween.
Oh, very good, very good. Well, I'm glad that I hate to take any of that time out of your rare day off here, so thanks for spending it with us on the show today.
Glad for you having me, man. I appreciate it.
Now, I want to start off with something really important here at the top. We don't have the luxury of seeing it right now on radio, but I know that you sport a legendary beard that ranks right up there with Gandalf and ZZ Top. So what is your secret to growing a soup strainer like that, man?
Well, I always say my razor is rusty and my barber is bored.
Okay. Very good. I mean, some people just have it, you know. I mean, I cannot shave and I can't get a beard like that. So
well, my over the years and stuff, as everything kind of keeps rolling along, it's been different lengths. I've had it as long, all the way down pretty much to my belt at one time. I was kind of wondering if I was going to be a stand-in for William Lee Golden and the Oak Ridge Boys.
Yeah.
For a few years there. And I've trimmed it up a little bit over the years, but it's gotten noticeably wider. So if I might be more of a match for Santa Claus.
Well,
I also said I was going platinum one way or another.
There you go. Okay, I love it. when was the last time anyone saw your face shaved? I mean, how long do you have to go back before you were growing that beard?
Really not too awful long. I always, you know, kind of had a close crop beard, you know, or a goatee and sideburns or something like that. I didn't really start growing whiskers probably until about, I don't know, maybe about 9 or 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
Okay. I was really, like I said, I knew that we needed to talk about this important thing at the top of the interview here.
Yeah. Usually, a lot of times, my whiskers would enter the room before I would.
Yeah, understandable. Well, Dallas, you've been involved in making music, I believe, for some 25 years, and you're approaching 20 album releases. Your latest release is called Gems and Jams, which I want to get to in a little bit. But your love for music, yeah, I think, is largely attributed to your mother. Would you tell me about that?
Yeah, my mama, Madge Lee, she got me my first guitar when I was 16 years old, which is many moons ago. I'm 54 now. before she got me my first guitar, I played sports. You know, I loved Waylon Jennings and Elvis Presley and Kiss and all that music when I was a little kid, I never really, had any thoughts of actually playing music or anything. I just, liked it because I was busy playing baseball, football, and I boxed a bit, you know. And growing up, mama got me that guitar when I was 16 and ruined my life. That's all I've ever did ever since.
Wow.
But my mama, Madge Lee, she was a very acclaimed Appalachian bluegrass and gospel musician. In the early 1950s, she was on the Midwest Hayride, and I've still got her old 78 records and her old Victrola that she used to play them on when I was a little kid, from when she was had recorded with a group called the Buckeye Bells in the early 1950s. And I still had all that. And then she quit playing. My dad came home from the Korean War. My dad was Dallas Moore Sr., and he came home from the Korean War, and mama kind of gave up her music for a long time and started her beauty salon. And she didn't pick music back up again until after she got me a guitar. And she picked up a whole totally new instrument to her, which was actually a very old instrument for her family, the mountain dulcimer.
Oh yeah.
And she went on to become a very prolific and world renowned mountain dulcimer player. She was great friends with the late Gene Ritchie, who was probably the most prominent of the mountain dulcimer players. And a lot of my mom's original music and stuff was all transposed and for a lot of the dulcimer societies and everything like that. And she did a lot of the great bluegrass and Appalachian and gospel festivals. Got to play alongside everybody from like Grandpa Jones Dr. Ralph Stanley and John Hartford and a lot of the greats like that. I think she even got to do one show with Jimmy Martin, who was always my favorite bluegrass guy, you know.
Nice.
But through all that, my mama, she always, even when she wasn't playing music herself, she always had music playing, you know, around the house when I was growing up. And then she, like I said, got me my first guitar and was always my biggest supporter and biggest fan and everything. So it all kind of started with her. And I did get to record one album with her before she passed. In 2013, we made a record called Old Time Family Jam. And it was just me and my mom. And we recorded all like old bluegrass Appalachian gospel standards that was the stuff that she had grown up playing. I think the only thing that wasn't like a fairly old-timey number, a lot of Carter Family stuff was on that album and stuff. But I think the only thing that wasn't, that was more kind of or even remotely contemporary, was when we did a version of John Prine's Paradise on that record, because my mom, she would harmonize just like an angel with me, you know. And she and I on that record, and so I was really, really glad that we got to do it. It's been out of print for a while. And hopefully maybe one of these times here coming up on like our birthday or anniversary or something like that, we might be reissuing that album. So she's still with us in spirit, you know, on stage each and every night. And it definitely was probably my biggest influence all the way from the start. My mama, Maggie Lee.
Dallas Moore is my guest here on 88.9 KETR. You've been called the hardest working man in honky-tonk, largely due to a rigorous tour schedule. So rather than asking how many shows you do a year, maybe the better question is, how often do you get to relax at home like you're doing today?
Well, I always say you got to roll the wheels to pay the bills.
Okay.
I don't take too many nights off. I have slowed down a little bit. I believe last year was the first time I had taken a full week's long vacation.
Wow.
In like 20 years or more. And I believe this year, but I still got over 300 shows in, and I do the same thing. It'll be the same thing this year for 2024. So I'm doing right around 300 shows again now. I think the most I ever did was a few years back. I hit 327 shows in a year, and that's coast to coast, from Texas to Tennessee and New York to LA and all points in between.
Yeah.
We'll pretty much go anywhere where we'll have us and take the country to the people.
Okay, wow. Well, I commend you on that. That is definitely a work ethic that most people don't have. So, congratulations there. You do get to hang your hat there in San Antonio, but that's your adopted home, I believe, right? What brought you to Texas? I think you're originally from Ohio, right?
Yeah, I'm originally from Norwood, Ohio, which is, well, they call it a city within a city. It's surrounded by Cincinnati. But when I was growing up, there was so much industry and factories, like the one my dad worked in, you know, there in Norwood, that it was always remained its own city. And it still does, you know, to this day. And even though things have changed very much up there with all of that, in regards to the factories, almost all of them have went out now. You know, from when I was growing up, I started coming to Texas to play music 18 years ago and play my first shows around. And I just kept coming back. And for a long time, we were just getting our tails kicked and having a hard time breaking in to a lot of the honky tonks stuff because we wasn't from Texas, you know.
Right.
But I just always felt like that this is where, you know, yeah, it would be a good, great home for my music and where it belonged. And I've even growing up before I even ever set foot in the state of Texas, I just always had it, you know, in my mind of that was a place that I wanted to be. It's so many of my heroes and influences, you know, world from here, and in music and you know, other things as well, sports and you know, movies and cowboy movies and all and everything, you know, when I was a kid growing up. And so about 18 years ago, I started trying to break into the Texas music scene, and I just kept coming back. I'm like a bad penny. I just kept turning up because I knew sooner or later if I kept coming back, it would catch on, and eventually it did. And it's been great. About 8 years ago, I started having a dual residency in between Cincinnati and Universal City, Texas, which is right here outside of San Antonio. And then we recently moved full-time, moved my wife and my daughter and our family here to San Antonio. And then we still have all of our family ties in Ohio and Kentucky as well. So, and I'm on the road so much, I still go everywhere, you know, all around the country. And it's, so it's great to be able to call a few places home, you know. And, but it's definitely, just been a, just a whole wonderful experience, actually, to be able to actually, you know, hang my hat, as you say, here in San Antonio. I fell in love when I was staying in Universal City. I just fell in love, you know, with San Antonio and this whole area around here. And I love all the hill country. And we do a lot of shows in like Luckenbach and Green Hall and,
sure,
and you know, and up in Austin as well. It's just kind of, everybody's just, you know, a lot of folks that, I guess I'm trying to say, like, I've never been anywhere where I felt more welcome, you know, or at home. You know, it's, and a lot of folks, when they say, well, they said, what do you mean you moved to Texas? We thought you've been here for 20 years. You know?
That's a good sign.
Because I was here so much, you know, in our travels. It's just been great, and it's a great place to call home.
I get the impression that performing live really puts you in your element. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. It's probably the one place, or one of the only places where I'm in the world where I'm most comfortable in my own skin. It's just I've been doing it so long now and so much that it's where I'm the most comfortable. So I always say we play them all, big and small. We played, I think the biggest crowd I've ever played in front of was 111,000 people. On a show I did with Lynyrd Skynyrd, it was a free concert with Lynyrd Skynyrd in Louisville, Kentucky, and there's 111,000 people there.
Wow.
Which was just insane, you know. And I've also played to two or three people.
Yeah.
And I always say, you know, we don't treat any of them any different. Charlie Daniels, you know, told me one time when we were doing some shows together, he said, you know, you're not playing to the empty seats, you're playing to whoever's in front of you. And I've always taken that to heart, you know. And it doesn't matter if I'm playing for two people or 200 or 2,000 or whatever, you know, they're getting, they have my full attention, and they're getting, you know, whatever the show is on any given night. And it's just where I feel most at home at. And so and at the end of the day, people always say, you know, how do you keep on going with the, you know, that type of tour schedule? And constantly putting out records and everything like that. And what I always tell everybody is it's still fun. If it ever got to where it wasn't fun, I'd probably, you know, figure something else out to go do. But I'm still having a ball. I'm 54 years old and wake up every day and feels like it's Christmas. You know, I get to go sing my song, you know. So it's pretty cool, and it don't hurt my feelings.
That's a very good point. Now, as I understand it, you grew up influenced by kind of the traditional country music icons, but I think people might be interested to know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you have a fairly diverse music palette. What range of music might we find you listening to at any given time?
Well, I'm kind of all over the place with stuff. I've always loved all kinds of music. When I graduated high school, I went straight into Northern Kentucky University on a classical and jazz guitar scholarship.
Wow.
And so in the daytime, I'd be playing Bach and Beethoven and Paganini, and then also on the classical guitar end of it. And then it was my only opportunity where I got to play in the jazz, like big band. But in the nighttime, you know, during my college years, I was playing in every honky tonk that I could get into, even though I was underage. You know?
Yeah.
But I started connecting the dots, you know. Willie Nelson was always my favorite guitar player. And I went down a rabbit hole of, well, who was Willie's influences? And come to find out his favorite guitar player was the great gypsy jazz guitarist Django Reinhardt.
Right.
And so I started connecting those dots. And then I was playing with the jazz big band, and I started realizing the stuff that Count Basie and Tommy Dorsey and Charlie Christian and all those guys were doing was not very far off from what Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys were doing, and it all kind of connected. It was just different. One Bob had a fiddle, and the other guys had a clarinet or
right.
whatever, you know. It was just different instrumentation, but it was a lot of the same arrangements. And I loved all of that music, you know. And so I just kind of have always put all that together with the music that I personally, you know, love was a lot of the original outlaw country from the original era of that, and classic country and southern rock but I love the blues and rock and roll and heavy metal and everything, you know, everything from Motorhead to Myrtle and everything in between, and then a big bluegrass influence, you know, from my mama, and I just kind of always put all of those influences into one big pot of jambalaya and stirred it all up, and that's how I just kind of make my own thing. It's a pretty big umbrella to get to be under, and then kind of make your own music and kick the can a little further down the road, I guess.
I love it, man. I think so many people get stuck into just, you know, I found this one genre I like, and they only get into that, but there's so much more to enjoy out there, and I think having an eclectic music palette is certainly important. I was wondering, are you still amassing a large collection of vinyl?
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things I was so glad that I always hung on to, because ever since I was a little kid, I've collected vinyls, you know. My first records were little 45s of Elvis Presley, and I'm so damn old. When you used to get a cereal box, they had little records that would come in the cereal box.
Oh yeah,
you get the Lucky Charms or whatever you had there, and they had a little record in it there, you know. I mean, that stuff like that still in my collection, but I always when I was growing up, I had over 2,000 vinyls, you know, just. From when I was a little kid all the way into my teenage years, when vinyls kind of started fading away before you know, made the big comeback that it
right.
has. You know, for a long time, you know, I would have never dreamed that I would have my records out on vinyl. You know, the first, you know, we always were putting CDs out, and in fact, the first two albums that I had were actually released on cassette. They were in 1996 and 1998.
Sure.
But I never thought, oh man, we're going to get to make vinyls. And then when we did, I think the first record of mine that came out on vinyl was the Mr. Honky Tonk album, which was produced by Dean Miller, Roger Miller's son, who's just a great producer and great friend of mine. He produced three records, but the first one that he did on me was the Mr. Honky Tonk album. And that was the first first time that I got to release one of my records on vinyl, and I was just, you know, over the moon with it. And so now every record we do is on vinyl, and it just made such a, it's just been such a great resurgence in it. And we sell more vinyl than we do anything else. You know,
isn't that crazy? You never would have guessed.
See stuff come around, but yeah, I always collected everything, and then with the resurgence of it, now I'm able to get, you know, I've got a lot of the old, I've got some of the records that will be considered like a holy grail, you know.
Yeah.
I've got a vinyl recording of Waylon Jennings live at JD's in Arizona, which I think there's just a few copies of that. I mean, I think there were I don't even know an exact number, but it wasn't many. And the only reason I got that album was my Aunt Ruby lived out there and was actually at JD's during the making of that record. And when she passed away, her son is my cousin Buzzard, and they made sure that I inherited that album. So I got that. And, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd's Street Survivors with the Flames. And, you know, I've got several things that are, you know, pretty hard to come by, you know.
That's great.
At the time, I never looked at it like I was collecting. It was just I was going to get, you know, whatever cool record I wanted to listen to, you know. And it's so great now, because now you can, and everybody's doing vinyl again. So whatever your new favorite, you know, it doesn't have to just be old music, you know, whatever you're into right now, you can, chances are, you can go get your vinyl of it and find another box and a place to put it.
I know. Who would have guessed, man, honestly?
I know. I would have never thought of it, man, but it's working out pretty cool.
Well, Dallas, how have you kind of adjusted to the changes in the music business over recent years? Because I know things are done a lot differently now than they were when you started out. So how are you kind of rolling with the changes?
You know, it's all, I guess it's everything is pretty much just like this, but it's especially the music industry, and especially in particular the independent music industry. I've always remained independent. I own all my own songs and our own publishing, and with my partner Brian DeBruller, we have our own independent record label, Soul Records. And over the years, I've passed on a few major label Nashville record deals, because they were the wrong thing for me. You know, they were things where you'd be giving away, you know, everything that you stood for or wanted to be, you know. And at the end of the day, they were just bad, crappy record deals. You know, I watched some of my friends and peers take those deals and end up bankrupt and losing their family and their business and their music and everything. And I was just always steered clear of that. And I decided a long time ago, for better or for worse, that I would just keep building my own house. And so that's what I've continue to do all the way up, you know, through right now. And that's what we're going to keep on doing. The internet and everything, it's made it so much more accessible to reach people and build your audience and your following, you know, around the United States and even around the world, because you have access to reach people that you never had before. But at the end of the day, you still have to get out there, and like I always say, you got to take the country to the people. you can do it. You can do this totally independent if you want to. You know, I work a lot. I've always figured you can work as much or as little as you want to. Depending on how much effort you want to put into it. You know, well, when I was coming up, like, when I started out coming out in the 90s, my first album came out in 1996. But at that time, you know, there was not, at least in country music, there definitely really wasn't very much of an independent, you know, scene. You either had a major label deal, or if you were lucky, you might be a house band somewhere, you know, and play the same place 4 or 5 nights a week for 6 months or a year at a time. And we used to have some of those gigs, you know, in our early days as well. But we definitely were not able to tour and the way that I do now, you know, and so many other, you know, independent artists are able to do. So it's all what you make of it, I reckon. So I just take what I can and try to make it work the best for me and my family. And and keep the roads hot.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your longevity. Like I said, things don't work exactly the way they used to, but people still find a way to make it work, like Dallas Moore, who is our guest here on 88.9 KETR. You released your album Gems and Jams earlier this year, which is a little different in the respect that it's not necessarily a kind of flashy full band production, more of a raw acoustic, I guess you could say minimalistic record. So tell me about Gems and Jams and why you decided to do this one a little differently.
Yes, so Gems and Jams is my 18th album since 1996, and it's my first solo acoustic record. It's 15 songs that I wrote, and it's just me and my mama Major Lee's old guitar, which she used on every one of her recordings.
Oh,
and
wow.
I've used it on everything that I've recorded since 2005. It's very, very special old guitar, and it's got its own sound, and I kind of felt like she was there making a record with me, you know. But we just set it up. We set up a vocal mic and two small condenser mics on the guitar, and everything is done in one take, all 15 songs. There's no overdubs. There's no post-production or effects or trickery or anything like that. It's pretty much as raw and real as it gets. And it's a combination of new songs that I've written, and some songs are older that were from my deep back catalog from back in the 90s, and a lot of those songs had been out of print for many, many moons. The record label that I was on back then went out of business, I believe, right around 2000. And so a lot of those songs, I just kind of thought they would be lost to the world. I wrote the songs, and I always kept the publishing and everything on them. And so I made some new versions of some of these old songs, because a lot of these old tunes that I wrote way back then, they still hold up. And in a lot of ways, I've kind of grown into the songs now, and they're a little more real and even more believable at 54 than they were at 24.
Okay.
You know, some of the things I'm singing about, you know, I've actually got out and lived them, you know, a few times over at this point now. So it's I think with making the record this way, it presents these songs. You know, like that. It's just the way that I wrote them, you know, just me and a guitar and nothing else. And it really puts the focus on the lyrics and also lets, you know, a lot of folks don't necessarily get to hear me play, you know, guitar just unaccompanied like that before. And everybody's like, oh man, I didn't know you did that. So it's the first time I've ever written an instrumental. That's actually the song that kicks the album off. It's called Shade Tree. And first time I've ever composed an instrumental tune for one of my records. And that's worked out pretty, pretty cool. And it's fun to play live and everything. But yeah, this whole concept of this album was just, I had it in my mind for a while. You know, that I was going to bring back some of the older songs. And I also had it in my mind of doing a solo acoustic record. And I was driving back from a West Coast run, and I was driving back to Texas a couple years ago. And I was driving across the New Mexico desert, and you kind of get in that little trance, like when you're driving, and
yeah,
the mountains kind of start changing colors and all that kind of stuff like that. And all of a sudden, the light bulb went off on my head. I was like, oh, the acoustic record and the Gems and Jams thing where I'm bringing back the older songs, that should be the one record. And I was like, duh, why didn't I think of that before? So it took me about a year because we were in the middle of in the middle of promoting the No God Juarez album at that time. And so it took me a minute to get through all of that record and get focused on this. And we finally got it, and we got it out. And it was pretty cool. One of the neatest things for me was in bringing back some of the older songs. There's a tune on there called Glad to See Me Gone that I wrote 30 years ago in 1994. And the only time it ever appeared on a record was on my first album in 96. And then after that, the record was out of print, and I figured the song was, you know, never to be heard again. Well, I put this acoustic version of it on here, and next thing I know, like American Songwriter magazine, put a premiere of it out, and it was like it's a brand new song. I was like, man, that's pretty wild to have a song I wrote 30 years ago get a brand new lease on life, you know. So it's working out okay.
We've got Dallas Moore on the line with us right now. So if people want to check out your extensive tour schedule or look into your vast library of music, where can they find you online, Dallas?
DallasMoore.com is our official website, and that has all our tour dates, all our merchandise, music, videos, everything. If we ain't got it, you don't need it.
Okay.
On BR549 on the hill. But everything's at DallasMoore.com. And then I run my own social media on Facebook and Instagram and X. I'm not on a bunch of the other stuff, but on those three, I am on that. So you can find me at Dallas Moore Band, on Facebook and Instagram and X. And if you get a chance, you holler at me and I'll holler back at you. But I'm always on there. I always try to respond to everybody, and I update everything on that, you know, pretty much on a daily basis, letting everybody know where we're at, because we're always on the move somewhere.
I was going to say, no matter where you're checking this out from, there's a chance he's playing a show near you. So,
yeah, that's right. If I ain't there, I'm on my way.
Very nice. Now, it should be obvious to anyone if they're just looking into you for the first time. There is another Dallas Moore who's a basketball player that might come up in people's searches, but just look for this guy's majestic beard if you're not sure you got the right guy.
That's every once in a while, people will Google the Dallas Moore, the basketball player, and they'll Google his net worth, and then they think that's me, and some people come up asking if I could borrow him some. Loan them some money.
I
say, I think you got the wrong Dallas Moore.
Yeah. I'm surprised that there's more than one. You know, that seemed like a pretty unique name.
Yeah. Even with my boots in my head, I think he's still taller than me.
Okay.
I that's why I played baseball and football. I wasn't the best at basketball. I think he did all right.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, Dallas, man, you are a blast to talk to. You've got all these, little snappy sayings for everything that I've asked you here, and you're just a lot of fun to talk to, man. I'm glad that we were able to catch up today.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on, Brother Matt, and anytime we can join you again, we'll tune it in and turn it up.
All right.
Thank you, man.
I wish you continued success and many more happy miles down the road, Dallas. Take care.
All right, brother. Adios, amigo. We appreciate you.
And I'd like to express my gratitude once more to Dallas Moore for being our guest on today's Notably Texan. His sharp wit and in-depth responses make him a blast to talk to, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation. We'd also like to acknowledge Brandy Reed with RPR Media for making this interview possible. My name is Matt Menke. Thank you so much for listening to Notably Texan on 88.9 KETR and KETR.org.